The Dr. Taz Show.
The podcast. Dr. Taz.
Your good health journey starts now. Here's Dr. Taz.
Welcome back to the show. Today we're going to talk about something near and dear to everyone's heart. We're talking about stress. Joining me today is Dr. Heidi Hanna. She is an integrative neuroscientist and the executive director of the American Institute of Stress. And you might be surprised, but yes, there is an entire organization dedicated to stress. So obviously, this is a public health problem. Welcome to the show, Dr. Hanna.
Thank you so much. I'm really excited to be here.
So I think it goes without saying that stress has become a common word, definitely in our culture, definitely in our country, and it comes from different places and different sources depending on who you're talking to. But for me as a physician, and I'm sure for you as a neuroscientist, you know, it's the root of a lot of what we see in terms of chronic illness and chronic disease. It's definitely the root of a lot of behaviors that lead to chronic illness and chronic disease. Where did we and how did we become a stress culture? And you talk a lot about stress addiction. I would love for you to maybe expound on that a little bit and give us a little bit of history and background of how this came to be and really what is stress addiction?
Sure. Great question. It's like, how much time do you have to talk about this topic? I'm already signing up for our follow-up session.
Exactly.
So yeah, interestingly enough, there is an organization around that started in the 70s. To look at the research around stress. It started by a doctor named Hans Selye, who originally coined the term stress to define something really simple, and that is the stimulus for change. And I think when he came out with this idea, it's really interesting. He wrote some great books and did some amazing research, but even he looked back throughout his life and said, you know, if he would have realized what was going to happen with this term stress, he probably would have been a little bit more specific about what he was talking mm-hmm. about, because as you mentioned, I think stress has really become a buzzword, and I think the big issue with that today is that we kind of blame everything on stress, and stress being something outside of ourselves that's causing this reaction to us, and just in that relationship already, we've put ourselves in a victim role. We feel like there's nothing we can do about it. We carry around the weight of something that we don't even clearly define. And so a lot of the impact of stress is because we don't really know what it is. And if we can't define it, we can't measure it, we can't manage it. And so a lot mm-hmm. of the work we're doing now with the American Institute of Stress is to look at the word and really get clear on what stress is, and the definition I've been working with for a while now is simply demand versus capacity. It's an energy we feel when demand is greater than capacity, but there's nothing inherently good or bad about it. It really boils down to our relationship with the demands that are, you know, in our life, the circumstances of our life, and how much we believe we have the capacity to cope effectively with those demands.
And that's absolutely something we see in practice. And then even as a mother, something we talk about with our children, that stress is different for everybody. I mean, stress can be, you know, for one person, their stress is a joke when you compare it to somebody else's. And we're always right. sort of doing that a little bit. Like, why is that person stressed? She's doing X, Y, and Z, or how difficult could this be? But stress, as you mentioned, is really your body's reaction to what's happening, how you react to it. And I think for our children too, you know, what I'm noticing is that in the generation of doing a lot for kids or coddling kids or however we want to describe that, they also have a very low stress tolerance, you know? So it's trying to understand this, like you're saying, the stress is not external, it's internal, and that we have a personal responsibility and also, I think, a parenting responsibility to really deal with stress, treat it as stress tolerance, almost as a skill to a certain extent, so that we truly understand it. Why do you think we've become addicted as a society to stress? Where do you think that is stemming from?
Well, you cover a couple of things already. I think one of the ways to look at it is to really look at how it's affecting our children. And why is that the case? You know, my kind of stumbling into this notion that stress could potentially be addictive came from a really personal journey of being a stress expert and kind of an energy expert on nutrition and fitness and sleep and all of those components. but still finding myself unable to calm down despite my best attempts. And I can recall, like it was yesterday, sitting at a spa literally trying to calm down and feeling like my nervous system had just been hijacked. Mm-hmm. And so I started looking at the research, and it turns out there's been quite an amount of research showing that stress provides a very similar reward system response in the brain to drugs, alcohol, sugar, all the other things we tend to get addicted to. And so I tend to just be really curious about everything and say, well, why? Why would it do that? And I think if we use common sense a little bit and think, well, why would we need to hardwire into our neural pathways these memories of stress? It really all comes down to survival and safety. So the brain wants us to remember something that may be dangerous so that we don't get in that situation. And that's one of the elements that happens, and an acute stress that's short-term just, actually enhances memory, enhances immune functioning, enhances a lot of things about our system. It's just that when that gets stuck, it does start to reprogram our experience so that it takes less and less to kind of tip us over the edge. So when I think about addiction, I think neurochemically, you know, we've got this reward system kind of creating stronger pathways. We also start to, unfortunately, get used to being in that stress state, and we depend on it in some ways to give us energy. So we're living in a world that's, as you know, really exhausted and overwhelmed. Mm-hmm. And so when we don't feel energized, it turns out one of the quickest ways, at least legally, to get a boost of energy is get an adrenaline rush. So we mm-hmm. kind of find ourselves waiting to the last minute, or, you know, kind of rushing throughout the day to provide us with that temporary energy. So stimulation, you know, is another piece. And I broke it down, the five things I think that may be helpful for people to understand when you think about stress addiction is that mm-hmm. it gives us stimulation, it gives us information, it gives us connection, validation, which is an interesting one I'll come back to, and then distraction, because sometimes if we don't want to do something and actually take action, there's nothing that fills the void more than just worrying about it and letting ourselves kind of go there. So the one I want to come back to, especially with our children, is that notion of validation, that we are a mm-hmm. stressed culture, and there's something really twisted in our society right now that kind of leads people to feel like the busier they are, the more stress they have, the more important they are. It's almost like a status symbol that if you actually have time on your hands, you're being lazy or you're
so
not
true.
Needed. And so kids are finding themselves falling into the same trap of needing to be busy all the time to be validated, and then you add to that the essence of connection, and kids are wanting to stay highly connected through technology, which unfortunately is just feeding into a lot of these same pathways.
I think that's such a eye-opener. If you start thinking, I mean, even for me, if you start thinking about stress as being an addiction, then you kind of put it on the same platform as alcohol, drugs, you know, sugar, carbohydrates, whatever else. Is it the same response? Are we having that dopamine sort of surge right after engaging in a stressful situation that we do when we might have sugar or alcohol or things like that? Is it the same from a neurochemistry standpoint? Is it the same exact pathway, or does it work in a different way?
Yeah, I would say at the foundational level, absolutely, it is the same. And there has been research that's looked at that. I think the thing that makes it more challenging and also in some ways mirrors the obesity epidemic is that you're talking about something that most people see as positive and mm-hmm. that's kind of really easy. I mean, it's like being a workaholic or, you know, I'm really stressed, I'm really tired, I'm really busy. Even things like passion that are considered positive, it's a wonderful thing to be passionate, but if you're turning on that circuitry all the time, you can be relying on it and losing the ability to effectively adapt or oscillate. We know we need downtime in order for our system to recharge, and yet because that feels uncomfortable, that's why our tendency is to just go back and get another fix of stress or stimulation. I think for me, that's why the framework of an addiction is so helpful, is because mm-hmm. we tend to beat ourselves up. We know that stress is bad for us. We know that a lot of times it's self-induced, and we could slow down if we made it a priority, but we can still kind of non-consciously find ourselves drawn back into the rush. And so recognizing that the more we do that, we do build up some sort of tolerance, and there's actually a bit of a detox process involved with coming down. And that's why I've moved more from, you know, just kind of my one-hour keynote talks to trying to really build integrative programs for companies or do, you know, two-week-long recharge retreats with people, because it's so uncomfortable to disconnect that you're going to come down first and you're going to feel a little out of sorts until you start to rewire some new pathways that say, okay, well, instead of feeling that negative drop in energy, I'm going to now focus on some things that are going to nourish me in a positive way, like gratitude or curiosity or learning or social support or even humor, which turns out to be one of the greatest ways to kind of decrease the stress while improving or increasing those nourishing chemicals in the brain and body.
Well, that's fantastic. And I know even just personally, after coming off of maybe a busy week or a week of a lot of traveling and then going on a vacation, you feel kind of lost almost for the first 24 to 48 hours. You're like, you feel odd. You don't feel like it's almost like you're having an out of body experience, essentially. So that's probably the coming down of that energy and then trying to reacclimate again. What's your take on technology and its role in creating stress or stress addiction or playing into any of these sort of instant gratification type behaviors where we constantly need a fix? What's your take there?
Yeah. I think technology, unfortunately, has just exacerbated this really quickly, so fast, in fact, that people feel really out of control. And again, that's kind of at the root of a negative stress response. When there's change and we feel like we have some control and we believe we have the capacity and we've got the connection socially to have support from other people, change can be wonderful and we become stronger as a result. But when change happens really fast, and I would say technology is that way, and certainly a lot of people are struggling with that right now in our political climate, that regardless of what you want to happen, when a lot of change happens fast and you don't really know what to expect, that's where it can really feel out of control. So what technology does is it adds this really fascinating other dimension of access to unlimited information. And that means that now in our hands, we have this window to the whole entire world, and it's more knowledge than we could ever accumulate in our lifetime. And so it's almost like you're giving somebody this drug of unlimited exposure to more information, more connection, more validation. And so I think in some ways it's like we're oversaturating our reward pathways because we've got too much of it. And then when we take it away, the body just it's missing that chemical release from that stimulation. So I've seen parents of children, you know, who take away their kid's iPad or iPhone, and the kids just throw an absolute tantrum. It's as if physically they've lost their pacifier, but in some ways that's exactly how I see it. This is a pacifier for them feeling their emotions, or God forbid, feeling bored, which is like this horrible thing, because we've kind of told everybody, you know, we need to live like we're dying every day and in every moment, you know, we need to see every moment. And I love that in some ways, but I also feel like we've created this culture of people that just aren't comfortable being still. And so when I speak with parents, I always say, I want you to just imagine that you providing unlimited access to technology for your children, in my opinion, is literally like hooking them up to an IV of a sugar solution nonstop. Their system cannot maintain the levels necessary to regulate that. And so you're creating an addiction that's going to be much more difficult to unwire later in life, just like, you know, sugar, that we see the same type of response.
So for any parents listening, I hope you heard that. I think it's a challenge to all of us as parents that unlimited access to technology for our children is like hooking them up to an IV of sugar, which we all know the effects of that. How do we, again, thinking individually as women and then maybe even thinking about our families, how do we collectively detox essentially from stress? How do we reacclimate to kind of a new mindset when it comes to being busy or to trying to accomplish things or trying to get things done? What's your advice there?
Yeah, I have so many things and so many different processes I like to walk people through. I would say from just kind of a transforming yourself to be more adaptable to the circumstances of your life, there's three things I think about in that process, and it's recharging, so literally recharging the energy that we have, the capacity that we have, rethinking, so starting to look at a new mindset and creating a mindset that sees stress as actually challenges instead of threats. And then the other one is redesigning our operating system. So that could be internally rewiring kind of how we do life and our rituals mm-hmm. and our routines throughout the day, but also, you know, collectively. So with our families, what are some rituals that we can add to our day or some habits we can build within organizations? And I will say, since you mentioned women, that one of the really fascinating things to come out of new research is that women really are hardwired neurologically to handle stress in very different ways. And this is a positive and a challenge. So the positive is we are much more integrative and holistic and nurturing, and we like to, you know, obviously be empathetic and compassionate. We have all these beautiful skill sets and traits, neurochemically as well as behaviorally. The challenge in that is that we also tend to worry more. We also worry about everybody else. We want to take care of everybody else before we take care of ourselves. We know the statistics show that just the general wear and tear on the female brain is greater. So whether it's depression and anxiety or even things like dementia and cognitive decline and Alzheimer's, and I don't say that to scare anybody, I don't want to stress anybody out, but to say that one of the biggest things for women to do is actually prioritize self-care and recharging our own battery. And I know everybody's heard the saying, put your own oxygen mask on first, but really deeply thinking about what that means. And I think one of the things that can help women sometimes is to recognize that stress is also highly contagious. So if we are experiencing stress, you can say as much as you want that you're caring about everybody else and that's why you're worrying. But studies have shown, there's one that came out recently, that, for example, teachers that have high stress hormone levels have students with high stress hormone levels. And so that's just one way. We read other people's non-conscious cues in order to know whether or not we're safe. So as women, I think we have this really great opportunity to show empathy and compassion for other people and to be social and to give and receive social support. But we really can't miss the mark with understanding how critical it is to do the things most important to our own energy, like eating, you know, eating a healthy diet every 3 to 4 hours mm-hmm. or so, making sure we're moving every hour to get circulation to our body, making sure we're getting adequate sleep. And the more that we recharge our own energy, the better we are at putting out this essence of calm to the world that really needs that. And so I think, you know, as women, we have a responsibility to go ahead and take care of ourselves. And then that goes to the rethinking, right, of me going to the gym is not being selfish, or me getting a massage is not being mm-hmm. selfish, if it's a self-care strategy that allows me to then show up more for the other people I care for and model those behaviors, especially to the kids that, you know, we can tell them as much as we want, but they're really modeling and they're watching our behavior. So for us to tell them to turn the phone off while we're glued to our technology,
I'm still on it. Yeah.
Not going to work.
Not going to work. We live that one definitely. And I would say too, just in response to that, I mean, just thinking through, because again, I walk in different doors on any given day. One day I'm walking in the home, one day I'm walking in the business or the practice, you know, one day I'm doing something else. But it's interesting to watch all those scenarios and how children feed off our energy as parents. So even though you may not verbalize something to them, they know very quickly. I mean, my daughter in 2 seconds will be like, what's wrong? And I'm like, nothing's wrong. Everything's fine. You know, or within the practice, like, you know, one ripple effect, one person being stressed all of a sudden creates this perception or this culture that everybody's stressed when it may not really be there. It's more, it's just spreading, like you said, it's contagious from one person to the next. So I think it's really important.
And the words we use are so important. To your point, the
Definitely.
Words we use are so important. So even catching ourselves and saying, I mean, I really tried to not even use the word stress. And I'll say, you know, I'll be honest and authentic. I'm experiencing a lot of challenge right now, or I probably have a little bit more on my plate than I should, and I'm working on. But it's the taking action part of it and really being clear on what it is. As soon as I started doing that, even forcing myself in situations that were stressful to say, this is an opportunity, this is a challenge, this is an adventure, I'm excited to see what's going to come out of it, it completely changes our brain's perception so that now instead of it being a threat to our survival, it's just an opportunity. And with that open perspective on the world, then we can be flexible and we can actually problem solve better. So same sort of thing, I think, with kids in those situations, to be careful that the words we're using are still having an element of some sort of personal control. Even if we can't fix all the problems, we can take action in a positive way that gets us moving in a good direction. And just even that piece of movement, I know I listened to one of your sessions on cognitive behavioral therapy, which I love. And yet I get frustrated sometimes because we spend so much time on the cognitive and not very much on the behavioral. And sometimes we need to move. You know, sometimes we just got to move our body to get our brain to come back online.
I cannot agree more. And I think, you know, whether you're running a company or raising children or just managing your own personal stress, I mean, I think the important points here are to understand that stress can be just as addictive as many other things that we talk about commonly in our culture, like alcohol or drugs or things like that, and that it's really the shift comes when we think about stress as an opportunity, not necessarily as something negative or something bad. So I'm hoping a lot of the tips you gave today are helpful and that our listeners will take them and rethink. I know I am, like, rethinking maybe how you structure your day or how you structure your week. I think simple things like starting mindfully in the morning, we've talked about that before on this podcast, that instantly sets the tone for your entire day. I think I saw a statistic from you, Dr. Hannah, of just how watching 3 minutes of negative news or negative TV results in kind of a 27% increase in you perceiving your day as negative. I think, again, being around negative people, I think that can have an impact. I know growing up, a lot of family members had this I'm stressed, constant kind of mantra that, you know, kind of impermeated the rest of us. So, you know, really kind of taking guard and taking note of those factors help you to manage what really should be called a disease. Do you not agree? Like, stress addiction might be the next disease and we need to call it out for what it is.
I do. I do think so. When I wrote the book Stressaholic, kind of going through my own experience with that, and I started looking at the research as well as, at the time, the DSM-4, but kind of going, well, what is it about addictions? And essentially, some of the key pieces that we look at is, does it interfere with your daily life? I mean, 75 to 90% of medical visits are stress-related. So, yeah, I would say we've got that one down. Is it hard for you to stop despite knowing the consequences? Well, for sure. Is there tolerance? Yeah. You know, people will get to the point where they're experiencing so much stress they don't even know it anymore, except the people around them know. So, you know, if you actually kind of go through all the diagnostic criteria, to me it really lines up. And I think what's especially important is how connected it is to so many other problems. And again, not to blame it all on some, you know, stress concept that's floating out in the air, but essentially looking at how we experience that when we feel like we don't have the capacity to cope with the demands of our life. There's a biochemical response that changes our hormones, and because of that is going to affect everything else. And so one of the examples I use a lot for people is nutrition. You know, you could eat the perfect food, but if your system is experiencing chronic stress, now you're looking at leaky gut issues, inflammation issues. I mean, who knows if you're even going to digest and utilize those nutrients as effectively versus something that maybe wouldn't be 100% healthy, but let's say it's 90%, it's pretty close, and you've got some things there you just like because you like them, but you're eating slowly, you're being mindful, maybe there's some social engagement to it, that's going to be much more effective. So I think in some ways we tend to blame the wrong things instead of really looking at, you know, what is my experience of these types of things. Exercise is another one I always joke about. Like, some studies have shown that people that work out that really don't want to are not getting the same positive benefits as those who work out and experience exercise is positive, or maybe they're playful, or they're doing sports or dancing. You know, again, if the chemistry is changing in the body, it's going to affect the results of the other efforts that we're making.
And I could not agree more. So rethink your stress. Think about it maybe as a symptom of an addiction. Find time to slow down and just be. I think we've had previous guests on that have said to just learn to slow down and stay still for a little bit. But really understand that the role that stress, technology, all of this may be playing not only on our own health, but on the health of our children, on the health of our society, on the health of kind of honestly everyone that we come into contact with. Dr. Hannah, thanks so much for taking the time to talk to us today. Where can we learn more about your work and what you do?
Yeah, so, you know, the first thing I want to mention as you were saying that, I thought, gosh, the greatest thing I could do is provide a way for people to understand their own relationship with stress. And I put together a real short stress assessment, and essentially what it does is it helps you identify what the different areas are in your life that may be contributing, like your lifestyle or your perception or your work experience. So it's real short, but you can go to mystress360.com to get free access to the assessment. And then the rest of my information is just at HeidiHanna.com. People can see more about my programs, and I've got some online meditation videos and courses. I also do a lot of work on humor, looking at the impact of humor on the brain and the body. It's one of my favorites. So if you're struggling to find a way to kind of cope with stress, I'd highly recommend finding things more funny during the day and sharing that experience with other people.
Perfect. Well, thanks for all your great tips and advice. I hope my listeners will take it and run with it and change their lives. I know I'm motivated as well. Thank you so much for joining us, and hopefully we'll have you back on again soon.
That sounds great. Thanks, Dr. Taz.